Great to have you with us here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Larry Mueller here. Did you spend a little time in the outdoors over the weekend? I know a lot of my friends did. Father's Day. Oh, we were at a dairy breakfast and stood in line for a while in the hot sun and played a little basketball outside, shot some hoops and played a little golf, played a little tennis. And a little sore. I did a lot of gardening.
Well, how did your knee hold up through all that activity?
Well, I did very slowly most of that stuff. So that who you just heard was Lori Tyne Brody, by the way. That soft voice of hers, melodious voice. And the other melodious voice you're going to hear in a second is from Jill Tyne-Nissenbaum.
Hi.
Oh, well, should I turn on your mic? Yeah, there.
It's better to keep her quiet until you really want to hear from her. Okay, older sister. All right.
Now
we're even.
Beginning.
All right.
Well, they are physical therapists. Lori and Jill both are. Lori's with the she's physical therapist and athletic trainer with Sports Medicine and Spine Center at UW. Jill is an assistant prof in the doctor of physical therapy program.
That's right.
At the UW-Madison. So it's always fun to get these sisters together to talk about those aches and pains and sprains and strains, and you can join in. Maybe you have suffered a little bit over the weekend, or maybe it was a couple of weekends earlier than that. I hope you'll join in with your questions at 800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org or go to my Facebook page at the Larry Mueller Show. You can post a question or a comment there. You know, I'm going to get my knee scoped in a couple of weeks.
Oh, you are?
Yeah. Mm.
It's about time. It's been a long time coming.
Yeah, so I'm going to be probably out of commission for a little while.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It kind of depends upon what they do with the arthroscopy. So when they go in there, it sounds like, I think you have some degenerative changes in your meniscus. Is that right?
Flap of the meniscus is sort of flapping in the breeze.
A bucket handle flap.
Every once in a while, it flaps the wrong way. And
yes.
And I get that
somebody
big
took a blowtorch to my kneecap.
Yeah. Ooh. Yeah. Yeah. Yep. Yeah, that's the problem. If that little tear, that flap would stay where it's supposed to be, then you could probably go along just fine. But every time it flips around in there, it irritates your joint surfaces and kind of stirs up a little bit of synovitis, and your knee gets stiff and sore, and it just creates a general chemical soup that is unhealthy for your joint surfaces. So you need to get it done. And you did a good job over, you know, well, that happened, what, last September when you injured it? And you've gone through therapy, and you had some injections. You did all the conservative things you were supposed to, but didn't turn the corner. So then the last resort is surgery.
Right. Yeah. But the good news is, because you've had physical therapy and you've done all these strengthening exercises, you'll be so much more ahead of the game after surgery.
Hope so.
Absolutely.
That's the plan.
We'll soon know. This is coming up in 2 or 3 weeks now. I'll have to check my book. Anyway, because I don't want to miss.
You don't want to miss that appointment.
Yeah, I don't want to miss that one.
Becky and Mequon, thanks for calling. Hi.
Hi. How are you today?
Great. Appreciate your call. What's on your mind?
I love to ride my bike, and I have those kind of ram horns, the handlebars that curl down.
Yes.
And it takes a pretty hard toll on my elbows and my wrists, and I wonder what my options are.
That's a great question. The first thing you can always look at is increasing your stem height and actually raising the entire ram's horns up a little bit. That way you're not loading as much through your elbows and wrists because you're not putting so much load on them because you're not leaning forward. And they have a thing, I think it's called a female stem, mm-hmm. that raises your handlebars up for women in particular because our torsos are a little bit shorter. It's harder for us to reach.
Right. And you can also get optional handlebars that fit on your curl down ram horns that provide you an alternative grip. Some that come straight out the ends. Check at a bike shop and see what they can fit you with so that you can change your hand position more frequently. And if you're really having a lot of trouble with it, it's worthwhile going in to someone who is a professional bike fitter if you mm-hmm. haven't had it done. Bike shops will do it. Here at UW, we have physical therapists who do professional fittings on bikes. And they can look at you mechanically and see how much of your weight is on your rear, how much is on your hands, what your shoulder and head position are, what your knee and foot position are, and make sure you're correctly fit to your bike. So if you're someone who loves to do that and you're having problems, it's a great way to go.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
And sometimes
thanks
a lot. And sometimes all of that doesn't help or doesn't work as well as you'd like, and then maybe it can be time to get a different bike too.
Yeah, absolutely. You want to make sure that your frame fits you.
Yeah.
And especially with women, our torsos are shorter, so we have to reach farther to get the handlebars.
Yeah.
So getting a good fit on your bike is really important. It's a great way to exercise, but you want to have a good fit.
Good luck, Becky. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. Catherine and McFarland. Let's see if we can get you on there. Hi, Catherine.
Hello. Hi there.
Hi.
I've had a couple of months of pretty bad back pain, kind of from my waist to my rib cage area. And I've had a couple chiropractic treatments. I've been in physical therapy now for about 6 weeks. And the one thing that really seems to set it off is sitting in a chair and then trying to, bring a foot up to put a shoe on or a sock on or things like that. So I'm kind of wondering if you have suggestions on exercises or stretches, because I think this pain is coming from somewhere lower and then manifesting itself in that area of my back.
Did you have any kind of injury that set this off, or what brought it on?
I think what brought it on was 2 months of working 2 part-time jobs and a full-time job and too much time sitting in front of a computer. And one day I just got out of the car after work, and as I got out of the car, kind of things went in my back. I've had also an MRI. They didn't find any herniated discs or any channel problems. I have a little bit of mild arthritis, age-related, because I'm 60 going on 61. And I'm normally active, but I have only been able to walk, not been able to do my water aerobics or things like that, because that kind of motion just seems to, set off pretty severe pain.
So when you say that kind of motion, what's the motion in water aerobics that sets it off?
Any kind of kicking, jumping, kind of, anything that would kind of put that close to 90-degree angle between my thighs and my, spine.
Okay. And the pain is in your back and in your ribs?
It's not as high as my ribs. It stops just short of my rib cage. It's across that kind of area I described as from the waist, kind of up to almost my shoulder blades and ribs.
So it's mid-back pain?
Yeah, mid-back.
Okay. And have they ruled out any other systemic causes of that pain? Because typically pain that starts in your low back tends to go down and not up. So, my best estimate is that the pain is actually starting higher, that it's up in your low back and thoracic. Have they looked at that area, or did they just MRI your lumbar?
The MRI was of the lumbar.
Yeah. Okay. Makes me wonder if they're looking in the wrong spot.
Mm-hmm. I agree. Right. I definitely agree. I wonder. It's a little unusual to have a disc pathology in the thoracic spine, but certainly not out of the question.
And also, I wonder if it's possible that you have a small fracture, if you could have an osteoporotic fracture in that area. And even though you didn't have any kind of acute injury, that might be the kind of injury you would see in that area. But it's unusual to have pain that kind of is in your low back up to your rib cage that starts lower, typically starts higher. So if your chiropractor and your physical therapist are looking primarily at your lumbar, I'd move on up and look at your thoracic lumbar junction and up in your thoracic spine.
There you go. Good luck. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. You can join in, too, by the way, at 1-800-642-1234. Talking today with Lori Tyne Brody and Jill Tyne Nissenbaum about dealing with those aches and pains and sprains and strains. They're physical therapists with the University of Wisconsin-Madison. Great to have them along. And again, thank you for listening in. Pam in Platteville, give you a chance now. Hi, Pam.
Hi. I wondered, I'm trying to lose weight and do all this exercising, but I'm trying to vary what I do. And one thing I like to do is go to the pool. which I did yesterday, and I notice I'm doing 15 laps, which is forward and back mm-hmm. in our small pool. And about 15, I get a terrible cramp in my foot. My toe is stuck up. I am sure you know what I mean.
Mm-hmm.
And should I eat more bananas? I mean, it's excruciating. And yeah. I know, I'm a teacher, so I know a lot of students. I don't want them to have to come fish me out.
Yeah, boy, that'd make for news, wouldn't it?
Yeah, it would. And I mean, but it is painful. So I try to make it do a different stroke, make it to the side, kind of massage it, which I did yesterday. And I thought, okay, it's all gone, which it was. But then a couple more laps, it was back. What
starts
can
back
I do?
Up.
What do you think, Jill?
Well, first of all, you know, the reason that she mentioned eating bananas is we know that sometimes if muscles are low in potassium, that we need more potassium in our diet, and bananas are a really good source of potassium. So that's why she said to eat more bananas. Number one, that's an option. I would, number two, make sure I'm really well hydrated and make sure that she's, when you're in a pool, you don't realize that, you know, you're sweating, you're losing fluids, and you may get a little dehydrated. So I would keep a water bottle at the end of the pool, and
okay.
every third or fourth lap or so, I'd stop and I'd take a couple big drinks. And the other thing is, because your foot is kind of in that pointed position for a prolonged period of time as you're kicking, you the muscles are in a shortened position and they can cramp a little bit.
Is it always in the same foot?
Yes, my right foot.
So it makes me wonder if there's something about your stroke that is causing some extra either load on that side, or if there's something, could even be something farther up in your spine where you're, there's something about your stroke that's occluding your circulation to the area or overloading that side. So, you know, you could also think about some instruction from one of those students of yours who has some expertise
no,
in...
No.
I know.
They're 17. I'm approaching 50. But that is the same side that I've had issues with, even walking, where I've had pain and stuff.
Mm-hmm. Okay, yeah. So you've got a something going on there. So you may want to focus on stretching out that side. If you
okay.
are a side stroke swimmer, you may want to swim side stroke on that side for a while, because if you're occluding something on that side, if you swim side stroke on that side, it's going to open up that side a little bit. And so if you intersperse some of that, that may help buy you some time.
Well, that's what I do. I do the
okay.
side stroke, and then I do the breaststroke. And it's when I did the breaststroke.
Oh, yeah. Okay, there you have it.
I do a five, and I'm fine, and then
yeah.
I get to the six, and
yeah.
all of a sudden my foot cramps
okay.
up, and I can hardly make it to the end of the pool.
Okay, so this is my own bias. I presumed you were swimming crawl stroke. If you're swimming breaststroke, that's the issue, because breaststroke puts you in a huge amount of lumbar spine extension. And so when you're doing that, you probably have a little bit of arthritis in your lumbar spine, and you're closing off the little openings where your nerve roots go out.
Okay.
So I'm guessing if you have a little something on that side, I'd cut back on the number of breaststroke laps and intersperse that with some stuff on your back.
Okay.
Yeah.
So that
All
could
right.
that could be your
well,
problem.
But I don't want to, you know, exclude that and so make it worse.
Right. No,
working,
no.
I mean?
Yeah. Oh, no. I understand that. But don't do so many in a row, because you're in that position for too long. So
okay.
you can do the same number of laps of breaststroke, but just break them up into smaller sets.
Okay. All right.
All right.
Thank you.
Yep.
Yeah. Good luck.
Thanks, Pam. Thank you very much for calling. Talking about how to avoid injury during summertime activities with our guests from the UW-Madison, Jill Tine-Nissenbaum and Lori Tine-Brody. I'm Larry Mueller. Judith Sears-Poisson, our producer on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Talking about avoiding injuries during summer activities, or dealing with them if you have some summertime activities that caused injuries. Larry Mueller here with Jill Tine-Nissenbaum and Lori Tine-Brody. An email from Debbie, who says she's 58, wishes to get in shape, could lose about 15 pounds or so. Out of shape, certainly would like to exercise. Where do I go, or how to find out where to build an exercise program getting me in shape without injury? My problem is I get all motivated, then over-exercise, then I'm in pain, so I don't exercise, and I'm right back to square one.
Oh, and she has a lot of friends that are on that wagon that fall off and get back on. That's very common, unfortunately.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, well... The first thing I usually tell people is you've got to figure out what it is that you like to do. So, you know, sometimes you can get a gym membership. Mm-hmm. You know, they give you a free 30-day trial or something. And the first thing to do is use one of those memberships and see which things you gravitate to. Do you like the treadmill? Do you like the bike? Do you like a cross trainer? Do you like the pool? Do you like the weights? And have somebody supervise you early on and be frank with them and tell them this is what you tend to do. So start slow and work your way up. And then if you say to yourself, oh, man, every time I get up in the morning and I think about going to the gym, I just want to scream. I'd rather just put on my shoes and go outside and walk. Well, that's telling you something about what you like to do. So figure out what you like to do, because you're more likely to be compliant with that and stick with it. And then get some guidance either from a personal trainer or, a certified fitness instructor. If you have some medical or orthopedic issues, certainly go to a physical therapist who can instruct you in things that are safe for you to do, given whatever your back problems, knee problems, shoulder problems are. Because you're absolutely right. If you start out and do something wrong and injure yourself, and we see a fair number of people at our facility who have been injured in exercise programs that were not thoughtfully designed, then you tend to give up. So
right.
Physical therapist is another good place to start.
Right. I agree. And I think what a lot of people gravitate towards, and me personally, this is my big thing, is I need someone to hold me accountable because I have no self-discipline. So I prefer to do classes where if I don't come to class, someone will say to me, Jill, where were you?
Yeah.
And I was sitting on the couch eating bonbons. So it increases my compliance for me. And it's very social. And I think as we age, in particular, finding friends at the gym who are our age to socialize with is really important. So that may be an avenue for you.
Absolutely. And that comes back to the know thyself
right
thing.
And thanks a lot for that question. Appreciate it very much, Deb. Let's turn to Diane in Cecil. Hi, Diane.
Hi, Larry. Thanks for the show.
You bet.
I have a back problem. I didn't have a specific injury. My back just kind of went out. It's my upper back and between my shoulder blades. But this time I have numbness and weakness in my right arm. I'm a real mail carrier. Oh. I've been going to the chiropractor, and that's helped. But I'm just wondering what else I should do and how long. I mean, if there is a disc that's bulging and pushing on the nerve, how long does that take to go away?
Where is, you said you had numbness and tingling. Where is that numbness and tingling, Diane?
In my right arm down to my hand.
Down into your hand? Is it more pinky side or thumb side?
Thumb side.
Thumb side, okay. All right. Chances are that this is probably a disc coming from your cervical spine. Even though you're having that pain more in your mid-back between your shoulder blades, that's a really common referral pattern for people
yeah.
who have cervical spine, either disc or degenerative changes. Mm-hmm. You're a rural Mary, so you're the person who sits in the car and drives?
Yes.
Yes, okay. And do you always have to rotate your head to the same direction every time you go to put mail in the mailbox?
Yes.
Which way do you rotate? To the right?
To the right.
To the right.
And then I'm also stretching... Yeah, I'm also stretching and
right.
turning to the
sure.
left, too. So.
Sure, to get the mail and put it in. So there's a lot of rotation.
Yep.
So I don't know. Have you seen I know you've mentioned chiropractic care. Have you seen a physical therapist to get some postural advice for sitting in the car and how to position yourself in the car better?
I know, but I've been thinking of that, yeah.
I think that would be a really good strategy, because sitting in the car with all this rotation is a tough hurdle to overcome, if you will.
Yeah, exactly. So you're the person who's sitting on the... Do you have your own van, or are you driving on the passenger side?
Yeah, on my own vehicle, passenger
yeah.
side.
Oh, yeah. That's just a remarkably strained posture for someone to mm-hmm. be in. I kind of shudder every time I see our mail carrier come by. So, yes, I would strongly suggest seeing a physical therapist who can talk to you about setup of your mm-hmm. vehicle to minimize this, because even though the chiropractic may help get you out of the acute event, it is not going to manage it in the long run. The research suggests that those are great short term, and if you respond fully in the short term, then you're great. But as time goes on, and I expect with the load you're putting on this, this problem is going to perpetuate and come back. So see a physical therapist and talk about how you're going to manage this with your job in the long run.
There you go.
Okay.
Thanks,
Thank
Diane.
You.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. You can join in, too, at 1-800-642-1234. What's troubling you these days from a physical nature? Or do you want to try and avoid some physical problems? 1-800-642-1234. Mary in Milwaukee, thank you for calling. Hi.
Hi. Anyway, I'm a golfer, and I had a knee injury, and also my wrist hurts. But I went to the doctor, and he just said, what happened is the knee part, the kneecap, et cetera, is out of the channel, is what he called it. And so he gave me some physical therapy, which I went. And then the physical therapist said, well, you can't do those because of my back issues. I have stenosis and, you don't need to know that. But I'm wondering, is there anything that can be done in regards to the knee? Because in golf, you sort of have to bend your knee.
Yes, you do.
And, and so I don't know what to do to not have that pain every time.
When do you have this pain when you're golfing, Mary? Is it when you're swinging? Is it walking the course? Is it reaching down to get the ball out of the hole?
Basically, most of the time, I can bend it for the first or second hole. But then by the time it gets to the third hole, the pain's just too much.
You mean bending your knee while you swing?
Yes.
Okay. All right.
Well, have you tried taking just a simple Tylenol or ibuprofen before you golf?
I've been doing that.
And that's not enough to get you through?
It's not enough.
Okay. Okay.
I've been doing a leave.
Okay.
And, I'm sorry, do you walk the course?
No, I ride.
Okay.
There's no way I could walk.
Okay.
I probably only make three holes.
Okay. Okay.
I guess my next suggestion would be to have you see a physical therapist who specializes in golf injuries. There are PTs who are certified in, is it a two-level, Jill?
Mm-hmm.
Golf.
Titleist.
Titleist certification kind of a thing. And they specialize in helping people who have orthopedic issues stay in the golf game. I know there are some here. I expect there's somebody in Milwaukee.
Sure.
Who is a specialist. So I would just make a few phone calls, starting with clinics that specialize in sports. They might call themselves sports physical therapy clinics, and then find out if they have someone who specializes in golf, and they can look at your swing and perhaps help you modify it to decrease the strain on your knee. There are also some taping techniques and some braces that sometimes help people with this kind of kneecap pain that may help reposition your kneecap some, again, temporarily while you get through your golf game.
Right.
Yeah, I did try doing that taping.
Okay.
And it actually did help when I pulled the kneecap back into the channel.
Okay.
And then I noticed that the pain is a lot less, if not even gone.
Okay. Can you golf with that tape?
Yes.
Okay. Can you do that taping yourself?
Well, the issue was the tape. I've tried different tapes, and there's a different tape you get from hospitals than you get from that you can get in the drugstores. And I don't know what it's a stronger tape.
Right.
Yes,
right,
ma'am.
Right.
Call that clinic where they showed you that taping. They can get you that tape.
Okay.
They can get you that tape, and if that's all it takes to get you through your game, then that should do it.
That should be the route. One last thing before you move on to the next. I also have what's known as golf wrist, which is, that pain between the thumb and the wrist bone.
Oh, yeah.
And is there something that can be done for that?
Well, that's,
you know, it's just a severe pain because you, again, you have to swing.
Right.
You know, you have to bend your wrist.
Of course, my suggestion would be to swing less. But if you've seen me golf, you know that's not possible.
That would be good.
Yeah, it doesn't always work that way. You probably have, I mean, that's the most common joint for arthritis. So you probably have some arthritis. So, you know, there are splints you can wear. You can wear, you know, increase the padding in your gloves there. Can do some wrist strengthening.
Some people find wearing a night splint is helpful. They're better during the day if they wear a little thumb spike, a night splint.
Yep. You can get those at a, I think, at a drugstore.
Yep.
Okay, an ice splint. That makes sense.
Yep.
Because when I put ice on it, it does feel much better.
Yep.
Yep. Good luck, Mary.
Good luck.
All right. Hopefully, my game will get better.
Excellent.
Good for you. Thanks a lot for calling. Marcia in Wisconsin Dells, it's your turn. Let's go to you. Hi.
Hi, Larry. Thank you. Hi. I had a total knee replacement done 2 years ago and had issues with that on keeping the leg straight, and worked really hard with physical therapy and got the leg straight as an arrow. Then I had issues after that with bending the knee.
It's not one, it's the other.
Yes. And then I had to go with twice more and have it manually manipulated to get it to bend. And
you mean with surgery?
Another,
okay.
Yes.
Okay.
Yep. And then another 4 months of physical therapy, and all I can get on that bend is about an 80-degree bend. And of course, now I'm back to work full-time. I work in healthcare, so I'm on my feet all the time. And I still have quite a bit of pain in that knee, swelling constantly. Some days it feels like it's like on fire. That feels like it's just burning, burning, burning.
Mm-hmm.
And then sometimes it's like itchy, itchy, itchy. So I'm just kind of like, where do I go now?
Yeah, those are all great questions. So are you standing mostly at work, Marcia? Walking,
yes,
standing?
Yes.
Okay. And I'm assuming you're on some sort of concrete-ish hard surface that you're working on. Yeah.
Constantly.
I would definitely
10-hour shift, you know, so.
Oh boy. Yeah. The first thing I would start with is making sure that you have really good shoes. Really good supportive shoes with a lot of shock absorption, because you need to unload that knee as much as possible. So that'd be the very first thing I'd start with. Another thing I can suggest for the kind of the swelling is you can get some very low grade compression garments that.
I've got those.
Oh, you do? Do you wear those?
I do.
Do you like them?
I do. No.
Oh.
I wear them because I'm in hopes of, you know, this is going to get better, and this is, you know, I do wear them.
Okay. How are your shoes?
I just, about a month ago, went and got $150 shoes.
Okay.
So I got the high-powered shoes.
Okay.
With the, you know, the good absorption and all that, hopefully. It's the swelling. It's the constant swelling.
Right, right. It makes,
you know,
me.
I mean, is this normal? Is this how this is supposed to go?
Well, it's not normal to only have 80 degrees. I mean, you had the manipulations. My sense is you have a fair amount of scar, and I'm guessing you have some scar that is pulling or tugging or compressing a neurovascular bundle, because you're getting neurologic symptoms, itching and burning. Those are neurologic symptoms. And the swelling could be having poor vascular return there, and so things are getting stuck in your knee. When you went to physical therapy, were they doing mostly stretching and that kind of stuff, or did they do any like deep tissue manual work with your knee?
I think they did. I had the gamut.
Yeah. Well, you'd remember, because it's not terribly comfortable. I mean, for someone to get in there either with their hands or with some instruments to really work that connective tissue, see if they can loosen it up. If you haven't had that done, that might be a way to go and see if somebody who does. There's stuff called ASTEM, That is some deep, soft tissue work, and see if someone who got in there with their hands for a few sessions could make any progress with you. Mm-hmm. But not just passive stretching, not just joint mobilization, not just riding a bicycle, but someone who really gets in there and works with their hands to see if they can loosen up some of that scar tissue, particularly if there's anything that's impairing a neurovascular bundle.
Mm-hmm. Would that help with then achieving a better bend?
Okay. Yeah, absolutely. If the scar tissue is what's holding you back, it might.
Yeah. So good luck, and thank you very much for calling, Marcia. I appreciate your call. Jill Tyne Nissenbaum, Lori Tyne Brody from the UW, our guest today, where they are physical therapists, do a lot of work, and have been on this show many a time to talk about how to deal with your injuries or how to avoid injuries during this time of the year. James in Ironwood, Michigan, has a question for you. Let's go there. Hi, James.
Hey, how are we doing today,
Mr. Great.
Phillips? Hey, I just wanted to make a quick comment. Tons of wonderful information this morning from the ladies from the university. But a quick comment I want to make regarding when we start looking at activity or environmental modification or some of the smaller things when we get down into the hand. We had a lady call in a bit ago with some pain at the thumb and wrist joint. We just hope we could mention our buddies over in occupational therapy as well when we start looking at environmental modifications, especially with the Postal Service individual who called up. And then also for the lady with the thumb and wrist articulation problem, as opposed to just going to Walgreens and picking yourself up a splint and trying to treat yourself at night. I think it might be just a good opportunity to mention maybe having an occupational therapist take a peek at that.
Absolutely. We love our OT compadres,
yes.
And we do often refer people to occupational therapy. So, yes, thank you for that call, and we continue to work hand-in-hand, pardon the pun.
No pun intended.
No pun intended.
Absolutely.
With our OT colleagues, especially in those occupational things, posture-related things, wrist and hand things.
That's right. They can make wonderful, amazing custom splints and,
Makes good sense. Thanks, James.
Yep.
Appreciate it. Rick in Ironwood, Michigan, your turn. Hi, Rick.
Hi. I have a quick question concerning latent damage, medial collateral, ACL type damage. 20 years ago, I tore my right medial collateral, rehabbed it myself, worked out real well. 10 years ago, I did the left one. And tried to rehab it myself, but I didn't have the equipment that I had for the first one. So I knew that it probably was a little bit more damage and that I learned to live with the pain. It would tell me whenever I overused it. But I haven't had a problem for 10 years until just recently. I went for about a 14-mile bike ride. The next day, my knee locked up, and then swelling took place all the way from the knee down to the bottom of my foot. And I haven't been able to reduce it the way, as quickly as what I think I should have been able to. What process could I use or do to help reduce the swelling?
Well, there's a couple things you can do, but to have that much swelling that's lingering this long and that far down into your extremity from a 14-mile bike ride, which isn't—that's a relatively benign activity—is concerning to me. So I appreciate that you want to decrease the swelling, but I think you need to get a little bit more involved in why you have all the swelling.
Mm-hmm. Right. So when you said you tore your ACL, did you get reconstructed?
No, I didn't.
One of those cases? Okay.
I'm one of those people that pretty much do everything myself, including stitches. So I didn't go in.
See that one. not everyone who tears their ACL needs to have it reconstructed. So, Jill's absolutely right. The swelling is one thing, but the reason for the swelling is the big question. So, getting rid of swelling, ice, compression, elevation. You ice it, you elevate it, you put some compression on, and theoretically, the swelling should go away. away. If it's not going away, then you have to ask yourself, why is it perpetuating? You know, what's wrong with your knee? There's some pathology that is perpetuating the swelling. And you really want to find out what that is. Because you can do long-term damage to your knee when you have that kind of unhealthy swelling in your knee.
Right.
Even after a couple days, research has shown that your quadriceps function diminishes measurably. And as your quadriceps function diminishes, it places more load on your knee every time you take a step. So you wear out your knee joint exponentially. So I would go in and get it looked at and get information, and then you can decide if this is something, again, you can handle yourself. So unless you can do a radiograph yourself, I'd probably go in and have someone looked at so you can get a better diagnosis, and then you can make a thoughtful decision about what you're going to do about it.
Good luck.
Eventually, that's what's going to happen. I'll have to go in. But what has helped is actually sort of the opposite. I put heat on it via a long-ray infrared sauna, and then elevated it and rested it, and those things seem to help. As a matter of fact, my knee joint now is not as locked up as what it has been in the past. It's just that the swelling below it hasn't reduced appreciably.
Yep. It's the resting and the elevation. I mean, I don't know that the heat had much of an impact. Most superficial heat and cold don't penetrate deep enough to really have a dramatic effect on swelling. You know, we tell people to do that. It makes it more comfortable, causes some vasoconstriction, and may help with it. But really, the resting and the elevation are the big players in getting rid of the swelling.
Thanks, Rick. Appreciate your call. Jill Tyne-Nissenbaum and Lori Tyne-Brody, our guests today. I'm Larry Mueller as we talk about avoiding injury during summer activities here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Larry Mueller here with my guests today, Lori Tyne-Brody and Jill Tyne-Nissenbaum, talking with them about avoiding injuries during summertime activities. Gary in Rhinelander tore his thigh muscle after falling on a patch of ice this actually last March. Now 3 months down the road, still aches. Now there's a big lump at the point of injury about the size of his fist. Apparently this is the muscle mass that tore from the rest of the muscle.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Surgery is not an option.
I'm 73.
And he, 73 years old, very active, walks 3 miles a day, cross country skis. So not sedentary.
No, good for him.
So what do you think?
Well, will the lump get smaller? You know, probably a little bit as it atrophies. You know, a muscle gets bigger as you use it and strengthen it. And if you don't use it, it kind of gets smaller. So because those fibers are detached, I would think it would get a little smaller over time.
It'll get a little smaller. And you can also help to remodel the blob. And so the blob that's fist size with doing some soft tissue work followed by some stretching. Because right now that wad of scar tissue doesn't have any good organization to it. It's just a blob. And with some stretching and some soft tissue work, you could get your blob to align a little bit better along the lines of pull of the muscle. And many times people just, they feel a little bit better with that.
So just massaging it, kind of the lengthwise of his thigh to kind of flatten it out and straighten it out a little bit and massaging it and preventing a lot of scar tissue from forming around it to kind of wrap around it, just keeping it really loose and pliable.
Chris in Milwaukee. Hi, thanks for calling.
Hi, thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I'm 48 years old and got into biking more recently in the last 5 years. I have a missing ACL in my right knee from about 25 years ago. And about 8 months ago, I tried to ramp up my conditioning a little bit, and I strained my adductor pretty severely, it seemed, and saw a doctor, and there was no major issues or no arthritis or anything. It just seemed to be a strain. So did some physical therapy and had an amazing physical therapist to work with. And but I have recently had some hamstring issues, and I have not been able to get rid of those. And the adductor is pretty much cleared up. But I'm just having some lingering chronic hamstring issues that I'm concerned about. And then also, any suggestions on aerobic exercise without having a hamstring?
So what things bother your hamstring? You said you upped your activity. Were you upping your biking, or did you add other things like running?
Yeah, I added a little bit of jogging.
Okay.
And tried to do a little bit of interval on my bike, interval sprinting type things.
And that'll be tough on it. That can bother your hamstring a little bit.
Did you have any ACL symptoms? This is in your ACL deficient leg. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay.
Just some slightly sore, you know, on the inside medial meniscal area, but nothing that I couldn't get by, you know, resting a day and then back on the bike.
Okay. So you don't feel instability in your knee?
I never have, no.
Okay. And did the adductor and the hamstring come on together, or the adductor came on and you rehabbed that and then the hamstring came on, or what was the temporal sequence here?
Yeah, it was the adductor only. And then I went through therapy and got that pretty much taken care of. And I, you know, thought I'd been in sports all my life. I thought I could finish it off, you know, and really take care of myself and do what my therapist suggested. And I just couldn't quite shake the adductor completely. And then started getting some of this hamstring problem.
And this happened on your bike?
That's the only thing I can remember, is that it's all I really do is bike a lot. So
It's unusual to have an adductor strain from biking, wouldn't you say?
It makes me think about positioning of the foot and how much float you have in your pedals.
Right, and your position on your bike.
Right.
And also, if any of us, can you put your hand on your adductor or your hamstring and find those tender spots?
I could very easily on the adductor.
It's
pretty much gone away, and I can feel it a little bit. And on the hamstring, yes, I could. And again, that comes and goes a little bit, but it's a little more chronic.
Have you tried any, I'm going to ask this to Jill, have you tried any dry needling of this?
I don't know if I know what that is.
Have you?
Oh, me? You're looking at me?
Yeah, I'm looking at you.
Oh, you're looking at me. I
didn't think he had.
Well, the previous caller sewed himself up, so maybe Chris was dropping needles. So the question that Lori asks is if it sounds like he's a candidate for dry needling, which is something that physical therapists can do. And yes, I have. And yes, it works very well in the hamstrings.
Okay.
If you live in Milwaukee, Chris, I know there are physical therapists there who do what's called therapeutic dry needling. And you use tiny little needles that are about the size of acupuncture needles. We don't do acupuncture. The intent is entirely different. If you have kind of knots in your muscles, we call them trigger points, you can actually put a dry needle in that trigger point and kind of create the twitch response, and can actually make those trigger points go away.
Do you have clips on your shoes for your biking, or do you?
Yeah.
I do. It's not on the shoe, actually. It's just a pedal clip.
Pedal clip, yeah. So your foot's getting positioned properly then.
Right. Yeah, for those chronic things, and it seemed like you were getting better but couldn't quite get over the hump, you know, you could try some more therapy, but it just kind of speaks to me of something that would respond well to dry needling. Mm-hmm. So I would try to find a physical therapist, and you can call back the wonderful physical therapist you had before and ask if he or she does dry needling or knows someone who does dry needling, or if they think that this problem would be amenable to dry needling, and see what they have to say.
Yeah, good luck. Thanks for calling. Appreciate it. Mike in West Bend, hello.
Good morning. Listen, I do a lot of trapping. I'm in the woods a lot.
Okay.
I tore my right knee in 2011, and I couldn't walk on it. 2 months later, it got so bad, physical therapist says, you tore your meniscus. Went to a surgeon. Make a long story short, went to an orthopedic surgeon. And the doctor's recommendation was open it up and get gel in there. This young surgeon down in Frater looked at me and he said to me, you tell me what you eat. And he put me on a diet. He said, I want you to go buy a book called Eat to Live, and I want you to follow it for 60 days. I want you to come back and tell me how bad that knee is. 90 days later, I could dance on the leg. And he says, your arthritis is always going to be there, but because of all that stuff you eat in the morning, you inflame it so bad. And a lot of this stuff with these knees and older people, I'm 63, is their diet. And he says, what do you eat for breakfast? And I said, well, I eat Cheerios and oatmeal raw, flaxseed, milk, and fruit. Okay, get rid of the milk. All cereal is garbage. Get rid of it. I said, well, I eat whole wheat bread. He says, that's white bread, spray tanned. He says, you're flaming that. So bad.
Spray tanned.
Nice. That's all it is. And he says to me, really, he says, try this. Because the younger surgeons are really into this nutrition. So I tried it. And my arthritis always beat her, but I can't tell you how good my leg feels going to 20% protein and a lot of juicing and a lot of plant-based food. It's amazing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's a lot of people talk about an inflammatory diet or their diet causing inflammation, and getting to more back to nature free will, or eating the very simple non-processed food, as you're alluding to. And I love the spray tanned white bread.
I love that.
I'm going to work that into a sentence today.
Exactly. I think I will too. How about that? Look at Mike. We're spreading everywhere. But yeah, eating lower on the food chain. And sometimes we talk to our patients about that, particularly patients with multi-joint arthritis,
right.
Patients with chronic pain who are just eating garbage. And it's so unhealthy for your connective tissue on a cellular level. It's a really important thing, and I'm so glad you brought that up.
Thanks, Mike. Thank you very much for calling. And I want to give Carla a chance to join in from La Crosse. Carla, hi. Thank you for calling.
Yeah. Hello. Thank you. I sprained my ankle about 8 weeks ago. I was just standing, and I just kind of turned my body a little bit. I had a pair of clogs on, and it's an ankle that I've sprained twice before. So it just took a minimal movement, and I could tell it was sprained. And I did some compression for a while, but it's still swollen, and like one day it'll feel good, and then I'll go for a walk, and then the next day it'll be painful, or I'll go for a bike ride, and then the next day I can't really walk on it.
Right. Have you seen a physical therapist at all for these recurrent ankle sprains, Carla?
No.
So you have what I would call chronic ankle instability, and what we know is up to about 80% of people who sprain their ankle once will go on and sprain it again. And it sounds like you're definitely falling in that category. So those ligaments, most likely on the outside of your ankle, are kind of stretched out and weak. And
I forgot to mention that week prior to that, I was working on the floor. So I was down with my foot, stretched back.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I probably, and to the side, because that
sure.
Foot tends to,
yep,
I tend to walk on the outside of that foot.
Right.
So I thought maybe that contributed to,
You're absolutely right.
Training.
You're absolutely right. You, Carla, would really benefit from an exercise program that they could give you to do at home that has some good strengthening exercises and a little bit of balance and proprioception. So when your ankle gets in that position another time, your body will know how to fix that or correct that or prevent it from rolling, if you will.
Yeah,
so you need to get it done.
It really feels unstable now,
right,
too.
Right, right. Yeah, you need to get it taken care of, especially if you want to walk for exercise and things like that. We want to keep you active.
Yep.
Okay.
Good luck. Absolutely.
Well, thank you.
Thanks, Carla. And Elaine in Madison, hello to you.
Hello. Okay, my right foot, like right under that bone that sticks out on the outside, something goes on whenever I'm walking on uneven ground. I get excruciating pain there, and then I found that if I turn my foot to the left, it just, which also hurts a lot, it sort of resets it or something. What is going on?
My best guess is you have some tendons that course around behind that ankle bone that are held in place by some bands of connective tissue called retinaculum. And they're slipping out would be my guess, is that they're supposed to stay behind that ankle bone like a pulley, but not everybody they do. So somehow when you're on an uneven surface and your foot is not in its normal walking position, those tendons are slipping out around there. So I would see a physical therapist for a visit or two, and they can take a look at it and verify that that's what that is, and then they can give you some strategies to deal with it.
Mm-hmm.
There you go.
It should be a pretty straightforward problem to deal with.
Yeah. Thanks, Elaine, for calling. We have a caller from Phillips who wondered about Charlie horses. What in the heck causes Charlie horses? Anything to do to avoid them? Something in the diet, stretching? We talked a little about that earlier, but bears repeating.
Right. So, if it's truly a Charlie horse, and a lot of people get them in their calves at night, the biggest thing can be diet related. And so making sure you have adequate potassium in your diet. Adequate fluids is a really big thing. I think as we age, we have a tendency not to drink as much water, and so we're a little chronically dehydrated. It's getting warmer out. We're sweating, more dehydrated. So making sure that you have adequate hydration by drinking a non-caffeinated beverage, lots of them.
And stretching, stretching before you go to bed. Mm-hmm. If you get these cramps during the night and you hang your legs over the edge of the bed and it feels better, you may have some claudication mm-hmm. in your spine, and that warrants a trip to your physician.
Right.
But if they still continue to cramp, then the strategies Jill talked about would be best.
All right. So I had one of those myself over the weekend, and I think it had to do with the fact that I hadn't had anything to drink.
Right.
Yeah. That's that double-edged sword. People don't like to drink a lot in the evening because then they have to get up during the night and go to the bathroom.
Right.
Right.
So making sure you have plenty during the day should sustain you through the night. But but making sure you have plenty of fluids, as Jill said, that are non-caffeinated, that are water-based mm-hmm. and so on is really helpful. And some stretching and being careful if you're walking a lot during the day to especially stretch when you're done.
Talking today with Jill Tyne-Nissenbaum and Lori Tyne-Brody about your physical health. We're talking about avoiding injury during summer activities. And they are going to be with us right up until 12:30 today. So we'll take a look at the news, and then we'll be back with Jill and Lori. Please stay with us. Well, nothing can ruin fun activities more than a sore back or maybe some painful muscles. And once a month, we are fortunate to have folks with us who know a lot about staying in good shape and avoiding those kinds of injuries or those kinds of sore muscles. Larry Mueller here. Today we have Jill Tyne-Nissenbaum, who's an associate or an assistant professor in the Doctor of Physical Therapy program at UW-Madison.
Thanks for the promotion.
Yeah, well, you deserve it.
Exactly.
And Lori Tyne-Brody, physical therapist, athletic trainer with the UW Sports Medicine and Spine Center. Lori, good to see you again.
Excellent to be here.
Nice to have you both here. You can join in. Maybe you have a question. Maybe you have an injury that you want to deal with. Maybe you want to avoid one. Call us at 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org or go to my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. Post a question or a comment there. And we have open lines so we can get you on real quick with your phone calls at 1-800-642-1234. Email from Kathleen in Oshkosh. Had knee pain, had an MRI in April, showed a torn lateral meniscus and a large paramenisciple cyst. Mm-hmm. I had pretty severe pain at times with it, especially at night and with climbing stairs and fast walking and with most exercise. But as soon as I finally made the appointment to see the orthopedic doctor, the pain greatly diminished to where it's pretty much gone.
It's always a great strategy for getting rid of your pain.
Yeah, I did go see the doctor and we discussed surgical options, but I'm not convinced that I need to do anything right now if I don't have any pain. Started last summer, increased peaking in December to April of 2013, and I don't recall an injury that mm-hmm. caused it.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. So I would have to agree with her that she's not having any pain, she's not having any symptoms, and she doesn't recall an injury that caused it. It's a good chance she's had that meniscal tear for some time. Something happened to cause that cyst to blow up a little bit, and it's probably the cyst that was giving her the pain.
Mm-hmm.
And then for whatever reason, the cyst went back down and her pain went away. So I would agree. I don't see any reason to go in and do surgery on it at this point if it blows up again, and then she can decide if she wants to do something at that point.
Stacy in Beaver Dam has pain that radiates from the middle of her left buttock toward the hip, and then at times down the laterally to her knee. Could this be related? She believes that she slipped while running this winter, but wondering if my underpronation is interfering with the healing process. Admittedly, I have not stopped running to allow the healing to occur.
Mm-hmm. Well, I would definitely say that her butt pain and her pain going into her lateral leg are related. It could be disc-related from that slip. It could be kind of nerve-related in that she's got some scar tissue there and she doesn't have nerves gliding as well as they should.
Yeah, and she says she's training for the Madison Mini, but she's having trouble with the longer runs because of leg pain. There are so many different guys that could be causing this problem,
right.
As Jill said, from her back to her hip, from right. the top down, or from her foot from the bottom up. So she could be right that she had an initial injury up higher, and then her foot mechanics are perpetuating the problem. This is not something that can be fixed without being seen. Someone's got to look at her. They have to examine her back, her hips, look at her running mechanics, look at her feet. She should bring her shoes in. But if she wants to complete the mini, and she's still struggling with this, she needs to get in and be seen so she can get the right diagnosis and get on the right track.
Right.
Tim in Oshkosh has a question for you. Hi, Tim.
Hi there. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Hey, my wife slipped on some ice in February and had a minor tear in one of her ligaments, I believe, or tendon in her ankle. Unfortunately, I don't know which one, but she can't push her foot down, flex it down. So my question is, I mean, she rested for a long time. Should she still be resting it? Because we were swimming yesterday, and she said she couldn't kick because she can't flex her foot down, and it was still sore. So I'm thinking it's probably tight and needs to be stretched and worked a little bit. But she's thinking that maybe she should still rest it. And we're kind of stuck where we...
Sure. Can she go up on her toes? Can she, like, if she had to reach something out of a high cupboard, could she push off and go up on her tippy toes?
Not all the way, no.
Has she been to therapy at all?
She has not, no.
Okay, well, this has been February, and it's June, and she's still having pain and stuff. She needs to get in and be seen. She should not be resting it at this point.
Okay.
You know, she's way past that resting window, which is really probably no more than a couple weeks.
Right.
So she's way behind the eight ball in terms of getting this handled. So she needs to get in and have it examined. Did she see somebody initially? You said that weren't.
She had an X-ray, which was kind of inconclusive, and then an MRI done on it.
What did the MRI show? Do you know?
Just that it was just a sprain, basically. That it was some minor tear.
Okay. Yeah, she needs to get into physical therapy and get this examined and get her on track to get going again. She shouldn't be symptomatic this far out.
Okay.
All right. Good luck. Thank you, Ron in Marshfield. Hi.
Hello.
What's on your mind?
I have random leg cramps. They come at basically after I've worked a little bit, and when I sit or lay on a flat surface, they're excruciating. They're usually in the inner thigh, and they run down to the back of the heel. I just absolutely crippling, can't move, just bite the rag, and it lasts about 5 minutes, and then it goes away for a couple months.
And is it in both legs?
Nope. It happens one at a time, thank goodness.
So it happens in both legs, but not at the same time?
Correct.
Okay. And you're either sitting or laying on the flat surface. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter if you're sitting or lying?
It's happened in both. It never happens when I'm sitting on a proper chair, but when I'm laying on the ground messing with the kids or when I'm sitting on a flat park bench, yeah, then it's just... It comes and it hits you like a ton of bricks.
So it's a cramp. It's not anything else. No lightning bolt. No anything like that. Just a cramp.
No, it's very severe. Very just incapacitating.
Can you tell when it's coming on?
I can feel it starting to come on, and I stand up and I try to walk.
And does that help?
Sometimes, but not all the time.
Okay. What does help it?
Got to ride it through. It only lasts 5 to 10 minutes.
Okay, and the predisposing activities, is it when you're being active, when you're at rest?
A lot of squatting, a lot of bending.
A lot of squatting.
Nothing real strenuous, a lot of squatting, a lot of bending.
Okay. Well, my best guess is that it's coming from your spine. Because the cramping on the inside of your thigh, that's not a typical place to get just regular muscle cramps.
It sounds vascular to me.
Yeah. Yeah, like a claudication.
Right, exactly. Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah.
So,
although usually like a bending usually relieves your claudication, right? So we said it's after a lot of bending. So, and may I ask how old you are?
I'm going to be 50.
Okay. And what kind of work do you do?
Very sedentary.
Okay.
You know, it doesn't happen that often, but the fact that when it does happen, it lasts 5 to 10 minutes. That is concerning, and it's a little
long time.
It's a long time. I was hoping he was going to say 5 to 10 seconds.
Yeah. Have you talked to your primary care physician about this? Hello?
Well, we might have lost him.
Oh dear. All right. Well, I guess in the absence of that answer, I would say the first step would be to go to your primary care physician and discuss this problem, because my first step, if you came to see me in the clinic, would be to rule out any medical issue related to this.
Right. I think vascular, femoral artery, you know, some sort of occlusion or something of the femoral artery.
Right, in the femoral artery. Yep.
That's what I keep thinking of.
Yep. Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, so I think so, too.
In.
So primary care physician.
I think so, too.
Yeah, even though it doesn't happen that often and you can write it out, you need to figure out what's going on before you have some other kind of event.
Wendy in Knapp, Wisconsin, thank you for calling. Hi.
Hi. I tend to have my arms fall asleep at night. And I did have a pinched rotator cuff in one arm that I saw a physical therapist for last year. But sometimes it's when I lay on my side, but sometimes, like, when I lay on my back, it happens, and it's both arms.
Mm-hmm. Well, it could be anytime you have something bilaterally, we always have to wonder if it's coming from something in the middle, such as your neck.
Uh-huh.
So the first thing would be a really good strategy. It sounds like you've seen a physical therapist in the past for the rotator cuff. The first thing I would do is make sure that it's not coming from your cervical spine. And the thing that comes to mind for me after that, if it's not coming from your neck, is thoracic outlet or thoracic inlet syndrome.
Yeah, I would agree. Mm-hmm. And is it your arms all the way down, or is it from the elbows down?
All the way down. And sometimes it's just my hands.
Okay.
So sometimes it'll be the whole arm. Sometimes it'll be my hands.
Okay.
I do a lot of lifting because my husband farms and he's on lifting restriction right now.
Ooh.
So
it's
hopefully going to be done in a month. But, you know, I start using my arms a lot.
Sure.
But it was before this.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. I've tried, you know, I thought maybe it was like pillows. So I've, you know,
that was going to be my
few things.
Mm-hmm. That was going to be my next question. Yep.
And it helped a little and went by. I just, you know, and I did talk to my doctor about it, and he was just kind of like, well, didn't have a lot to say.
Yeah.
Okay. I mean, because
all right. Well, the pillow thing is a good strategy to see if it is related to that. People who sleep with their elbows bent will sometimes get some neurologic symptoms from their elbows down. So sometimes it has to do with your elbow position. Sometimes it has to do with your shoulder position. But if you went in with a visit to see a physical therapist, they could evaluate your neck, your thoracic outlet, your elbow, and your wrist for, like, carpal tunnel.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it could be coming from any of those spots or more than one of those spots.
Right.
So it's really hard to discern in, you know, 3 minutes over the telephone. So
I understand that.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But no, I'm not I don't want to dismiss it, but the symptoms you complain of could be coming from many places, and you need someone to take a look at you and figure that out.
I completely agree.
All right. Yeah. Good luck. Thank you for calling, Wendy. And Andrea in Hartford, Connecticut.
Wow.
Hi. Thanks for calling.
Hi, you guys. I'm on a hands-free on the road in Wisconsin right now. I am from Hartford.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
I'm so glad to talk to you about this. It's such an interesting way of describing the issues. I appreciate it. And I have a situation like the gal with the left hip butt ache and stuff like that. And at other times that's gone down into my foot and ankle and other everywhere, shoulders and everything. I'm working on it. I think I may have found the core cause, and I think it's a disease that might need a name, and I have been calling it mommy hip.
Yep.
Mommy hip.
Yep. Do you always carry your child on the same hip?
And then I was pregnant, and then I was doing that for like 8 years. I was like, that left hip was out there with a 20-pound kid on there,
mm-hmm.
and all that estrogen in the body. So do you have ideas for that? What else can I do to sort of strengthen and realign that? Because everything else adjusted around that.
Right. Oh, well, one of the first things, how many kids do you have?
Well, I'm quite a bit older now, so I've been working on this very slowly with ballet and yoga and diet and walking and many
But I think what we're seeing in a lot of postpartum moms, regardless of how many years ago they've had their children, is weakness in their core muscles. We know that one of the core stabilizing muscles, the transverse abdominis, shuts off when we're 6 weeks pregnant, and it never really comes back onto its full potential without some good rehab, and it's intimately related to the hip. And so we're seeing a lot more kind of importance or value, if you will, of getting core stabilization and getting postpartum women really, really strong through their core. So that's a really good place to start. I like the fact that you're doing yoga and some of these activities is great.
Mm-hmm. But one of the things to keep in mind is that we love these classes, the yoga, Pilates and everything, for strengthening the core. However, sometimes what's happening is these classes are being superimposed upon an existing imbalance, and they don't really solve the imbalance. So sometimes you need some visits with a physical therapist for some very specific and directed exercises, maybe to one side strengthening, one side stretching, maybe some mobilization to get you balanced first. And then you add these exercises on top of that sort of balanced body. Sometimes if you go into the classes and you're not aware that you're asymmetrical, then the classes don't necessarily help. Or sometimes you can get hurt in the classes because the exercises, although they're good, are superimposed upon an existing imbalance, if that makes sense to you.
Well, I had that impression, and I left yoga for that reason. I thought I needed like a personal yoga instructor, or just it wasn't helping just for that reason. I was stretching around it and not striking the imbalance. So PT might be something to look into still for some hip jutting exercises, let's say, to kind of feel closer to a realignment in there. And then carry on as I do try to be as bilateral as possible.
Exactly.
There you go.
Yep.
Good luck. Okay, well, thank you.
See, that gardening seems to help. So I'll just say that.
All right.
Good luck.
Yeah, thanks, Andrea. Renee in Milwaukee. Hi.
Yeah, hi. A number of months ago, I fell almost all of my weight on my left knee, and it was a fairly high fall. And since then, whenever I try and squat or kneel down or really flex that knee significantly, I get quite a bit of pain, a sharp stabbing pain behind the kneecap.
Mm-hmm. Right. Did you have x-rays or anything taken when you first fell?
Yeah, I did. Okay. And it didn't show any fracture or anything like that.
Right. Well, what happened when you fell on that kneecap is you really irritated the undersurface of your kneecap, the articular cartilage back there on the undersurface of your kneecap, which can be very, very problematic. You can think of it almost as a bone bruise, if you will, and they can take a very long time to heal. So when you do things like squat and kneel and flex, you're kind of compressing that undersurface mm-hmm. of your kneecap into your thigh bone, and that's what's kind of creating your pain. I'll tell you something you can try. Don't laugh at me, but
No.
Okay. Don't laugh.
I'll laugh.
Okay. You can use a sink plunger. My husband.
I use that all the time.
Yeah, but I bet you don't use it on your kneecap, do you?
No.
So go to the local Ace Hardware store. Get a little sink plunger. They're like $3.99 or something like that. Put some Vaseline on the perimeter of it and uh-huh. put it over your kneecap and gently pull up on your kneecap to kind of unload it, if you will. So
it creates the suction.
It creates, that's exactly right. So it's almost like you're lifting your kneecap up and away. And you can try that for 3-4 minutes and then do those activities that hurt and see if it makes you better. It's very short-term relief, but a lot of people like it.
Mm-hmm. And
very good. I'll give it a try.
Right. Okay. And you can also have a visit or two with the physical therapist. You can bring your plunger along and they can examine your technique. But they can also look at your hip an ankle and give you some strategies for how you can accomplish your daily activities without further injuring your knee and help protect that knee as well as your hip and back, because those joints are going to get extra load as your knee recovers. And so you want to make sure you're doing things with as normal a movement pattern as possible so you don't injure an adjacent joint.
Mm-hmm. There you go.
Okay.
Thanks. Yeah, thank you very much for calling. Bill in La Crosse, you have a quick question. Bill, are you there? We lost Bill. All right. How about Abby here, who has crunchy knees? They sound like crumpling paper when she walks or upstairs or bends down. When I exercise, my knees get very warm when I finished and ache the next day. Crunchy knees have been with me as long as I can remember.
Okay.
Is there something I might be able to improve my exercise routine, stretching, low impact?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, crunchy knees are usually an arthritic kind of symptom. I don't know how old Abby is, but yes, the first thing you would look at is what the exercise is that she's doing and if any of those exercises are potentially aggravating a knee. We might make recommendations for a different kind of activity. We might also look at how she's doing the activity. If you have weak core muscles, particularly in your hips, then that creates an overload on your knee joints. So she may need some instructions in some postural exercises, some core strengthening exercises, so that when she does exercise, she's putting less stress on her knee joints.
Right. And, of course, footwear, too, to make sure that that helps with keeping her entire chain in good alignment.
And quickly from Carrie in Balsam Lake, broke her little toe last week, did not go to the doctor. It's still a bit swollen. Need to tread carefully. Should I have it looked at or?
Typically, you just tape it to the toe next to it and wear a hard-soled shoe for a while, you know, until
with
it
a wider
starts
toe
to heal.
Box.
A wider toe box, a firm sole, not a soft sole.
Yeah.
So
have you guys got lots of fun things to do this summer yet that are going to get you out and maybe get aches and pains of your own?
Absolutely, yeah. I'm going to try really hard to work that hard enough that my muscles hurt. My muscles,
exactly.
I want some sore muscles, not sore joints.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I'm doing the bike ride again across Iowa. I'm picking up my bike today. I haven't been on it yet, so I'm going to have a really sore tush if I don't get my tush on my bike.
Oh, yeah, because that's what, 500 miles?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah,
it's a pretty good, good hike.
It's a pretty good hike. Yeah, but we like it. So.
And it's a lot of fun. Well, we are going. Judith and I are going to the Midwest Renewable Energy Association Fair in Custer, Wisconsin, and of course we're inviting everybody to come along with us. I've got a UW Extension Associate Professor and Horton Ag Agent from Portage County, Ken Schrader, going to be my guest. And the Midwest Renewable Energy Association Fair is coming up this week. So
oh, great.
All right. Leaving Thursday night and driving up. And Friday for Garden Talk, we will be on the air and got a nice outdoor arena. And hopefully we're not going to get rained on or it's going to be wet.
Fantastic. Is it going to be an even surface? Is it a dirt?
No,
is it
it's up and down a hill, I think. And
up and down
sort of
a hill.
There's some theater seating, arena type seating.
Okay.
So.
Well, just be careful walking that hill on the uneven surfaces. It's going to be hard on your knee.
Lori and Jill, thank you so much.
Thank you.
It's been great.
I look forward to your next visit. Lori Tyne Brody and Jill Tyne Nissenbaum, UW specialists in physical therapy. And great to have them along. And you know what? It's great to have you listening. Thank you so much for listening. And please stay with us. Lots in store here on the Ideas Network.